We present Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter Wimsey in The Nine Tailors by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted for radio by Alistair Beaton, with Timothy Bateson as Superintendent Blundell, Philip Latham as the Reverend Theodore Venables, and Stephen Greif as Nobby Cranton. Episode 6, A Damnable Business.
In the village of Fenchurch St. Paul, Lord Peter Wimsey was to be seen entering the church. Unlocking the door in the tower, he made his way up the spiral staircase. He then passed up through the great bare clock chamber till he came out beneath the bells. If their tongues could speak, they could tell him what they had seen. But they had neither speech nor language. Somewhere in or near this church, a man had been murdered at New Year. Then the murderer had mutilated the body to prevent identification and buried it on top of the coffin in Lady Thorpe's grave. That there was a connection between this and the theft of the Wilbraham emeralds 10 years before was already clear. But now the emeralds had been found, there was no apparent motivation for the murder. The one hope left was to find out the real identity of Jean Le Gros, the man who made the mysterious journey from France to the village of Fenchurch St. Paul, only to keep an appointment with death.
Come in, my lord.
Thank you.
I just received a letter from Monsieur Rozier. We now know who this Jean Le Gros really was.
Ah, splendid. I only hope it helps.
Apparently, the French police searched Suzanne Le Gros's house and found her husband's original identity disc. He was an Englishman, right enough. And can you guess where he came from?
I've given up guessing, Super.
He came from a little place in Kent, only about half a mile from the wood where Deacon's body was found after he broke out of jail.
Oh, now we're coming to it, Blundell.
I got on the phone straight away as soon as this letter arrived. This man, who later called himself Le Gros, joined up in 1914, last seen on the last day of his leave in 1918, just 2 days after Deacon's escape from prison.
It makes no sense, Super. It makes no sense whatsoever. If this man joins up in the first year of the war, how on earth could he have been elaborately in league with Deacon, who went to Maidstone in 1914?
Well, how's this, my lord? You see, I've been working this thing out, see? Deacon burst away from a working party, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was found still wearing his present dress, mm-hmm. Right? Now, here's this Le Gros, hard nut by all accounts. He's walking through the woods. This is 1918, right?
Mm-hmm.
On his way back to France, and he finds Jeff Deacon lurking about. He collars him and discovers he's got an escaped convict.
And the convict says, let me go and I'll make you a rich man.
Right, and our soldier friend has no objection to that. Lead me to it, says he. What is it? The Wilbraham Emerald, says Deacon. Then Deacon, like a fool, lets out that he's made a note of the hiding place for the emeralds and he's got the note on him. Well, the other man thinks, why split it two ways? So he lams Deacon over the head. But when he gets the paper off of the body, he's upset to find that he can't make head nor tail of it. So he pops Deacon down a hole in the ground and makes tracks for France. How's that so far?
Fine, full-blooded stuff, Super. But why should Deacon be carrying a note of a hiding place about with him? And how did he come to be written on foreign paper?
Well, I can't answer everything at once, can I?
Hmm. I wonder if Mary Thoday can shed some light on this. I wonder if she would recognise the cryptogram.
So you think she was in on the crime when she was still married to Jeff Deacon?
Well, I'm not sure. But there's something strange about their behaviour over New Year, and I don't think it would do any harm to pay a call on the lady. I hope you'll forgive me, Mrs. Thoday, if I take your mind back to a rather painful episode. I mean to say, bygones are bygones and all that, and one hates to get anything up, what? But when it comes to dead bodies in other people's graves and so on, well, sometimes one gets pondering about them and all that sort of thing, don't you know?
Yes, indeed, my lord.
Hmm. Well, would you mind taking a look at this photograph? See if it rings a bell.
Him? Oh, I remember him, my lord. That was Nobby Cranton, that took the necklace and was sent to prison same time as Mr. Deacon, my first husband.
Do you know that this man is also Stephen Driver?
What? You mean the man who was here in the village at New Year?
Hmm.
No, this can't be Driver. Driver had a beard.
Especially grown for the occasion.
Yes. I suppose now you've told me, you can tell it's the same man. Does that mean Crampton's dead?
Nobby Crampton is very much alive and kicking. And you had no idea that it was the same person? You never recognised Driver?
I had no idea it was Crampton. If I'd ever had such a thought, I'd have spoken to him. I'd have got out of him where he put those emeralds.
And what do you suppose Nobby Crampton came down here for?
Doesn't that show, my lord, that it was him as hid them after all?
But Nobby Crampton claims he was told in the dock by your late husband that the emeralds were here, that he should ask for Taylor Paul and Batty Thomas to find them for him.
I don't understand that, my lord.
Well, looky here. There may be some connection with this cryptogram. Have you ever seen the writing before?
Oh, that writing?
You recognize it?
No. No, my lord, no.
Really? We had an idea that it might have been written by some man your late husband knew when he was in jail. Did you ever hear of anyone called Jean Le Gros?
No, my lord.
And you never knew anyone called Paul Taylor?
No, never.
Oh, well, I just wondered.
Where did this paper come from?
Hmm? Oh, this. It was picked up in the church, in the belfry.
In the church?
Well, I mustn't bother you any more, Mrs. Thaddeus. I just wanted to clear up this little point about Crampton, that's all. Forgive my barging along and bothering you about what's forgotten. Oh, by the way, I gather from Mr. Venables that you and Will didn't go to church this Sunday.
Well, no, we didn't, as it happens. But if you don't mind my saying so, that's our business, my lord.
You're quite right. Absolutely. No reason for going to church if one doesn't feel like it, is there?
Well, my lord, I sent that cryptogram to the governor at Maidstone, where Deacon and Crampton were held, and whose do you suppose the writing is?
I've been thinking it over, Super, and I think it must have been Deacon's.
Yes, well, you're quite right, my lord, it is.
When I showed the paper to Mary Thoday, I felt sure that she recognised the writing.
How did it come to be written on that foreign paper?
Did old Lady Thorpe ever have a foreign maid?
She had a French cook.
At the time of the theft?
Yes, she left there when the war broke out, I remember.
Oh, and that's clear enough then, ain't it? Deacon invented his cryptogram before he hid the emeralds. He couldn't have taken it to prison with him, therefore he must have handed it to somebody.
To Mary?
Well, perhaps. And she must have sent it to Le Gros in France. But why him?
I thought it were a bit reckless, if you'll excuse me, my lord, showing that paper to Mary Thoday. She skipped.
Skipped?
First train to London this morning, and Will Thoday with her.
Good God.
You may say so, my lord. Gone off, that's what they done.
Well, I admit I didn't expect that, but... Ah! Of course! Superintendent, I think I have been the most unmitigated and unconscionable ass that ever brayed in a sleuth-hound's skin. Of course! Do you know I believe I've solved the entire problem? With one trivial exception, that is. Probably you've done so, too.
What's the bit you haven't solved, my lord?
The murder.
Oh.
Look here, Super, this is going to be a dash painful sort of story. I think I'd like to test it out a bit before I come up with it. Will you do something yourself for me first? I'd rather not say anything until that's been done. After that, I'll say anything you like.
Well?
Will you send this envelope to the French police, asking them to open it in the presence of Madame Le Gros? It contains a photograph. I'd like to know her reaction to it.
Well, all right, my lord. I'll send the envelope to Monsieur Rosier.
Let the envelope remain sealed, Blundell, and be so kind as not to ask me whose photograph it contains.
Very good, my lord. Anything else?
Yes. The Thodays. I'm a little uncomfortable about the Thodays. You're looking for them, I suppose?
Of course we are, my lord.
Mm. Well, when you've put your hands on them, will you let me know before you do anything drastic? I'd rather like to be there when you question them. You shouldn't have any difficulty with them, provided, that is, you catch them within a fortnight. After that, it'll be more difficult.
Why within a fortnight?
Oh, come, Super, ain't it obvious? I show Mrs. Thoday the cipher. On Sunday morning, neither she nor her husband attends Holy Communion, and on Monday they depart to London by the first train. Oh, my dear Watson, it's staring you in the face. The only real danger is the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Oh, indeed. And how about Mussolini and the Emperor of Japan?
Negligible, old lad, negligible. Likewise, the Bishop of Rome. But get on to it, Blundell, would you? Get on to it. There's a good fellow. Come in.
Ah, Lord Peter, I was looking for you.
Ah. Look here, Padre, I'm frightfully sorry to be haunting the rectory like an unhappy ghost, but the truth is that my investigation has reached rather a crucial point, and there's not much I can do except hang around and wait until there are further developments.
Quite, quite, yes, yes, I do understand. Oh, good gracious, how silly of me. I almost forgot what I came to tell you. Superintendent Blundell is on the telephone for you, from London.
Is he indeed? Aha!
Come through, come through.
Thank you.
There we are.
Ah. My dear Blundell, what news?
I just heard from the French police, my lord. They showed the sealed photograph to Madame Legros, like you requested.
And?
She identified it as her husband.
I thought so.
If you don't mind me asking, my lord, whose photograph was it in the sealed envelope?
Don't you know, Super? It was Jeff Deacon, of course.
Deacon?
Deacon.
So, he never died in 1918. It was he who got to France, came back to England, and went to Fenchurch St. Paul to look for the emeralds.
Did a deal with Nobby Crampton?
That's right. This means Nobby Crampton's the killer, my lord.
I rather fear it does, yes.
I shall have him arrested immediately.
So be it.
Oh, another thing, my lord. Mm-hmm. Will and Mary Thodey were detained this morning.
Good, good, excellent.
What's more, I checked the parish registers, and the vicar of St. Andrew's Bloomsbury says he's been asked to perform a marriage between William Thodey and Mary Deacon. It was scheduled for next Saturday.
What did I tell you, Blundell? But let's deal with Crampton first. I'll drive up to London right away, and we can interrogate Crampton together.
Right. I didn't do it. And I want to make a statement. Where do you want me to begin?
Begin at the beginning, go on till you get to the end, and then stop.
What you want to know is, how did I first hear that Deacon was still on deck, eh?
Let's have the truth now, Crampton.
Very well. He wrote me a letter, that's how. Somewhere about last July it would be. I burnt it, being an honourable gentleman. But it was some story, and I don't know if I can do justice to it.
I'm sure you'll manage.
Well, it seems that when Deacon got out of Maidstone Jail in 1915, after an unfortunate encounter with a warder, he had to sneak about Kent for a day or two. The third night he was out there, lying doggo in a wood somewhere, and he heard a chap coming along, rolling drunk. So Deacon pops out from behind a tree and paced the fellow one.
He must have struck a bit harder than he meant.
That's what he said, of course. But he'd done for a warder already, and you can't hang a man twice. What he wanted, of course, was a set of clothes, because he'd still got his prison duds on. Well, when he came to examine the takings, he'd found he'd bagged a Tommy.
What did he do then?
He changes his clothes with the Tommy, collars his papers and whatnot, and tips the body down a hole. Then he heads for London, hoping to find an old friend. But he gets drunk on the train, see? And the next thing he knows, he's in another train, with Tommies all around him. And from what he can make out, he's bound for the front.
That's a very remarkable story, Nobby.
It's clear enough. Some kindly soul must have examined his papers, found he was due back, and shoved him on the nearest transport bound for Dover, I suppose.
That's right. Caught in the machine, as you might say. Well, he finds he can't get away. And 2 days later, he's at the front, and he suddenly grasped what he was in for. He must have got a right vertical breeze up. Anyway, he never got to the trenches. He got mixed up in the retreat, got a knock on the head and some other injuries, and wandered about for a bit. Then a girl found him. Deacon was pretty smart about that. He pretended he'd lost his memory.
Suzanne Legros. We know about all that.
You seem to know a lot.
Now tell us about the emeralds.
Oh, yeah. Well, Deacon learned from an old English paper he got hold of somehow that they'd found the body in the hole. His body, as everyone thought. Now, it worried him to think of those sparklers all tucked away and doing no good to anybody, and him not being able to get to them. So, when I come out of jail, there was a letter from Deacon waiting for me.
So you promised him false identity papers to get back to England, provided you shared out the emeralds?
That's it. Of course, we didn't exactly trust each other. I mean, how was I to know he wouldn't double-cross me again? Well, in the end, he sent me a cipher to help make out where the emeralds were, though I couldn't make head nor tail of the thing. Call me a mug if you like, but I've sent him over some money and some perfectly good papers. He wanted them made out as Paul Taylor. Must have thought it would be a good joke. But by the end of the month, I'd heard no further from Deacon, and I thought I'd been had proper. So I got windy. I thought I'd better go down to Fenchurch St. Paul and see what was happening.
That was where we ran across one another, I think.
Yes. If I'd known who I had the pleasure of stopping, I'd have walked off home.
Oh, that's very handsome of you. Pooh. You then got a job with Ezra Wilderspin and made inquiries about Paul Taylor and Betty Thomas.
Yeah, and a nice business that was. Mr. Paul Bleaton Taylor and Mr. Batty Thomas. Bells, if you please. Well, I took the idea that the cipher must be connected in some way with a bell, so on a Saturday night, a bit after midnight, I went down to that church, and the minute I put my hand on the door, I found it was open. Well, I thought Deacon must be in there, on the job. But who else could it be at that time of the night? I looked around, but I couldn't make out where Deacon was, so I went up to the belfry, and that's where I found him. Boo! There he was.
Dead?
As a doornail, tied up to a big kind of a post, and a look on his face. I don't want to see a face like that again. Just as though he'd been struck dead and mad all at one go, if you see what I mean.
I suppose there's no doubt he was dead.
I never saw anyone deader.
Stiff?
No, not stiff, but cold. My God, I just touched him. Then I heard someone starting to come up the tower. There was another ladder, and I legged it on up that as high as I could go. I wasn't keen on being found up there with the body of me old pal Deacon. That might take some explaining. Well, then I heard this other chap moving around, and there were some bumps and dragging noises. I realised whoever it was getting the body down the ladder. Well, when he was gone, I thought, you'd better be making tracks, Nobby. But it was awkward, see, going down in the dark, and after a bit, I switched my torch on, and I wished I hadn't. There I was, and those bells just beneath me, and God, I hated the look of them. I went all cold and sweaty, and the torch slipped out of me hand and fell and hit one of the bells. I'll never forget the sound it made. It wasn't loud, but it was terribly sweet and threatening. And it went humming on and on and on. And a whole lot of notes seemed to come out of it. You'll think I'm loony, but I tell you, that bell was alive.
You got too much imagination, Nobby.
Oh, you wait, Mundell. You wait till you get stuck on a ladder in a belfry in the dark. Bells are like cats and mirrors. They're always queer, and it don't do to think too much about them.
Well, after a bit, I crawled on down. It felt like hours. Oh, I dare say it wasn't more than 5 minutes. I groped around and found the torch, but I discovered later I'd lost the cipher. Must have come out of me pocket when I pulled the torch out. Well, in the end, I got out of that church, and I ran and ran. God, how I ran. But see here, what I've told you is the truth and the whole truth. I swear to you, Deacon was already dead when I found him. I don't ever want to go back to Fenchurch St. Paul, sir. I don't mind telling you.
Yes, I know what you mean.
It's a most extraordinary tale, Lord Peter. Most extraordinary. Well, to think that Deacon was alive all that time. And, of course, Deacon was the body in Lady Thorpe's grave.
Yes.
And so Crampton and Deacon, after all those years, came back to Fenchurch together to pick up the emeralds from their hiding place, thereby completing the crime they started so long ago.
That's about the size of it, Padre.
But then there was some sort of quarrel, and Crampton killed Deacon.
Well, there's where our problems begin. Because, curiously enough, I am far from certain that Crampton is the murderer.
Oh, dear. How very complicated. And poor Mary Thoda. How distressing for her. To have married Will, thinking that her first husband was dead, when all the time he was living in France with another woman. Oh, dear.
I'm a shortly talk with the Thodas. I rather wish I hadn't come butting into this, Padre. Some things may be better left alone, don't you think?
Oh, my dear boy, it does not do for us to take too much thought for the morrow. Oh, it is better to follow the truth and leave the result in the hand of God.
Well, I dare say you're right. I'm sorry to have made so much unpleasantness anyway. I really would rather go away now. I've got that silly modern squeamishness, you see, that doesn't like watching people suffer.
I can't say I'm looking forward to my next interview with the Third Heirs.
Now, look here, Mr. Blundell. I don't see what right you've got coming in here.
No, no, Mary. You'd be well advised to keep quiet till your husband's finished his explanation.
Now, let's get your story clear, Third Heir. You heard that the body of a man who might have been a convict had been found in the churchyard. And though the face was quite unrecognizable, you were, shall we say, inspired to identify him with Geoffrey Deacon, whom you had supposed to have died in 1918. You said nothing about it till your wife, the other day, saw a bit of Deacon's handwriting, which might have been written at any time, and was, shall we again say, inspired with the same idea. Without waiting for any further verification, you both rushed away to London to get remarried. And that's the only explanation you can give.
That's all I have to say, my lord.
You know, I don't think you quite realise your position, Thirdly. We don't want to stand in the way of your marriage, but the ugly fact remains that you were the man with the best cause to do away with Deacon. And that means, supposing a charge were laid against you and brought into court, well, they might want this lady to give evidence.
Well?
Well, the law does not allow a wife to give evidence against her husband.
I see. I see. It come to this. Deacon robs my poor Mary of her good name by stealing them emeralds. Then he makes bastards of our little girls. And now he can come between us again at the altar rails and drive her into the witness box to put my neck in the rope. If ever a man deserved killing, he's the one, and I hope he's burning in hell for it now.
Very likely he is. But you do see the point, if you don't tell us the truth now. Mrs. Thoday, when did you first realise that Deacon had been alive till the beginning of the year, and that you were, therefore, not legally married to Will?
Only when you came to see me, my lord, last week.
When I showed you that piece of writing in Deacon's hand?
Yes, my lord.
Now, see here, Mary. How did you know that paper wasn't written donkeys years ago? What made you jump so quick to the idea that Deacon was the corpse in the Thorpe grave? Just answer that, my girl.
I don't know. It came over me all of a sudden.
Yes, it did. And why? Because Will had told you about it already, and you knew the game was up, because you'd seen that there paper before.
No, no.
It's no good, Mary. Don't answer. Don't say anything. They'll only twist your words round into what you don't mean.
Don't you see, Will, that if you tell us what you know, and we are satisfied that your wife knows nothing, then there is nothing to prevent your marriage from going through straight away. You see, somebody must have known something for your wife to have jumped so quickly to the conclusion that the dead man was Deacon.
Stop that! You say another word and I'll... She never knew. I did know. I'll say that much. As I hoped to be saved, she never knew a word about it.
As you hoped to be saved. Well, well, well. So you did know. And that's all you have to tell us?
I'm not saying anything more one way or the other.
You don't want to help me. Oh, well, never mind. Let's try this. You tied Deacon up and left him in the vestry while you went round to steal Mr. Venable's keys. Then you took him up into the belfry because the bell chamber was nice and handy, and it was easier than escorting him through the village. After that, you brought him some food. Perhaps Mrs. Thoday could throw some light upon that. Did you miss a quart bottle of beer or so about that time, Mrs. Thoday? Some of those you got in for Jim? Oh, by the way, Jim is coming home, and we'll have to have a word with him.
What?
That doesn't seem to please her much, my lord.
The next day you went over to Walbeach to get some money. But you weren't feeling well, and on the way home you broke down completely and couldn't get back to let Deacon out. Now, that was damned awkward for you, wasn't it? You didn't want to confide in your wife. Of course, there was your brother Jim.
Jim had nothing to do with it.
Very well. But in between December the 30th and January the 4th, somebody killed Deacon. And on the night of the 4th, somebody buried the body. Somebody who knew him and took care to mutilate his hands and face beyond recognition. And what everybody will want to know is at what moment did Deacon cease to be Deacon and become the body? Because that's rather the point, ain't it? We know that you couldn't very well have buried him yourself because you were ill. But the killing is a different matter. You see, Thoday, he didn't starve to death. He died with a full tummy. Now, you couldn't have fed him after the morning of the 31st. If you didn't kill him then, who took him his rations in the interval? And who, having fed him and killed him, rolled him down the belfry ladder on the night of the 4th?
With a witness sitting in the roof of the tower. A witness who'd seen Deacon and recognized him.
Oh,
Mary!
Hold on, my lord. The woman's fainted.
It's a damnable business, Blundell, the whole thing. If ever a fellow deserved a sticky death, it's this Deacon brute. If the law had found him, the law would have hanged him with loud applause from all good citizens. Why should we hang a perfectly decent chap for anticipating the law and doing our dirty work for us?
Well, 'tis the law, my lord.
Oh.
In any case, we're going to have a bit of a job hanging Will Fody. Deacon was killed on a full stomach. If Will did away with him on the 30th or the 31st, why'd you go and collect the £200? If Deacon was dead, he wouldn't want it. On the other hand, if Deacon weren't killed till the 4th, who fed him in the interval? If Jim Thody killed him, why'd you trouble to feed him first? The thing makes no sense.
Suppose Deacon was being fed by somebody, and suppose he said something infuriating, and the somebody killed him all of a sudden in a frenzy, not meaning to.
Yeah, but how did he kill him? He wasn't stabbed or shot or clouted over the head?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Perhaps the rector killed him, perhaps the sexton killed him, or the blacksmith, or... Oh, curse the man. He is a perfect nuisance, dead or alive, and whoever killed him was a public benefactor. I wish I'd killed him myself.
In that episode of The Nine Tailors, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael. Superintendent Blundell, Timothy Bateson. The Reverend Theodore Venables, Philip Latham. Nobby Cranton, Stephen Greif. Will Foday, Keith Drinkle. Mary Foday, Claire Clifford. Narrator, John Westbrook. The Nine Tailors was adapted by Alistair Beaton from the book by Dorothy L. Sayers and was produced by Martin Fisher.